Welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. Thank you for joining us, and I'm going to introduce myself as Bob Griswold. That's my right name. So,
Mary Griswold.
Christy Frazier.
Alan Herr.
Glenn Fink.
This week, we're going to talk about some of the differences between the government that our founding fathers set up and the government that we have today, and some of the reasons for those differences. And first of all, I'm going to focus on the presidency of Woodrow Wilson. He was the 28th president, and he served from 1913 to 1921. As a note of history, he was the last American president to travel to his inauguration ceremony in a horse-drawn carriage.
Oh.
He is also the president who really changed our republic and changed the balance of power that our founding fathers had set up between the three branches of government. He did that. One of the things that was passed during his administration was the 17th Amendment, which was passed in 1911. Actually, it was proposed in 1911. It was passed in 1913 after it was ratified by three-quarters of the states, and that was the direct election of senators. Anybody want to comment on how the direct election of senators has impacted us?
Prior to that, the states appointed or somehow came up, appointed the senators that they sent to Washington. Therefore, their two senators represented the state's interest, not the interest of the people of the state, but the state's interest. And the state always had that ability to recall the senator. If the senator was not properly representing the state's interest, bring him back, put in another senator.
It diminished the role of the legislature because the legislature would appoint those senators.
The state legislatures, yes.
The state legislatures would appoint the senators, where now, since it's an election by the people, the majority in the legislatures don't have as much influence as they used to have, and that was purposeful. That wasn't done by accident.
You know,
You change it from a system where you have states forming a union to a central government is what that did.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we were formed where the House of Representatives sort of blew in the breeze. I mean, they took the current opinion of the people as they were represented, and they might blow one way, they might blow the other way. And originally, they were elected for 2 years at a time, which was very fast turnover. The senators are elected for 6 years at a time, where one third of them are elected each 2 years. So it took a long time to make a change within the Senate itself. Now, the Senate, again, represented the state's interest, not the people, but the state's interest, and it took a long time to redo that.
And we have that same effort being made now by Democrats who want to eliminate the Electoral College. The Electoral College also reasserts the independence of each state. Whereas if you eliminate it, then the role of the state is diminished, just like they did with appointing the senators. So we have to be careful that we don't allow ourselves to continue down that road that Wilson started.
If you eliminate the Electoral College, we will be governed by New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles, and Boston. That's about it. And places like Rhode Island and Montana and North Dakota will never see a presidential candidate because there would be no point, because you could actually win the president. If were it not for the Electoral College, you could win the presidency by New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Boston, maybe a Texas city. You know, you could do it very easily and totally ignore rural America.
Well, I mean, it's just a movement away from a republic. I mean, it dramatically moves you. The 17th Amendment moved us more towards a democracy
mm-hmm.
because of what Alan had shared earlier and others. And obviously, if the Electoral College, that moves us even more towards that. But it is the big population areas have the biggest control, obviously.
And we see how well they're governed.
Yeah, that's
and if you look at the Constitutional Convention, the smaller states would never have signed on to the Constitution had it been representation by population. And it's representation by state. Like you said, Mary, every state, even the smaller ones, they get two senators. They look at two senators. Plus, they have, by the Electoral College, they have impact they would not have had. So the Constitution would never have passed had they done what they want to do now.
And what has happened, too, with the election of senators, and I'm going to pick on Senator Joe Manchin for a minute. When he voted for the Inflation Reduction Act, he voted against the interests of the state that he represents. He voted against the interests of West Virginia on a promise that the Democrats gave him that they would change some of the oil and coal regulations. They broke that promise. Had he been appointed by the West Virginia legislature, he would have been immediately recalled. Now he has a formidable challenge for his Senate run next year, but we'll see how that goes. But the other part of it is, if you watch what goes on in the Senate, and again, I'm going to pick on Joe Manchin, when his vote doesn't count, he will vote for the with the Republicans and look like a conservative. But if they need his vote to pass a law, as they did in the Inflation Reduction Act, he will vote for the Democrats. And that's what has happened with the nationalization, if I can use that word, of the Senate. Because you have Chuck Schumer, who's telling people how to vote. You do not have them representing their individual states. They are being told by the people who control their campaign money how they are going to vote, because when they were appointed by their state legislators, they didn't have to campaign. They were appointed. So now you've turned the Senate into something about money, whereas the House, because they get reelected every 2 years, again, money plays a very important part on the votes that they take. But that was the House. The Senate was supposed to be the slow, deliberative body. And when they passed the amendment under Woodrow Wilson, they changed that.
Well, you know, originally, like you said, Mary, when the original Constitution, the federal government's role was very limited, actually.
Mm-hmm.
They were supposed to deal with relationships with other countries.
Mm-hmm.
They were supposed to deal with trade between the states.
Protecting our borders.
Protecting, you know, defense and things, so on. Now it's gotten where they're involved in everything. For example, one of the most egregious decisions was made during the Carter administration when they passed the Federal Department of Education.
Yes.
There's nothing in the Constitution that puts any role for the federal government in education. But the Federal Department of Education, they have the control of funds, the federal funds, and now they dictate to the states how the schools are going to be run. And the ironic thing about it, we don't have enough Republican legislators that have the courage to defund it. All they mm-hmm. have to do is defund the Department of Education and do away with it. It's not in the Constitution, and it could be readily done, but you've got to have the desire and the motivation and the courage to turn us back to where the Constitution originally was designed.
Have we lost the 10th Amendment?
10th Amendment being, well, everything not enumerated here belongs to the state.
Well, I think if you look at it, there's nothing, there's very few things you can point out that the federal government's not involved with. Now, the Supreme Court, when they overturned Roe versus Wade, they reinstituted the 10th Amendment because they basically said that the decision on abortion should be made by each individual state. So that was reasserting the 10th Amendment.
Yes.
Instead of it being a federal rule.
Didn't Trump point back to the state for COVID rules?
Yes, he tried.
Okay, so weren't the governors, and I call him King Cooper or Pooper, whatever, but didn't the state of North Carolina, it's a red state, but it followed more of the blue state?
Yes, it did.
During COVID.
What happened there? Well, what happened there was that the state itself was supposed to, in an emergency, they're supposed to get together the state board of
Council of States,
which is all the elected officials, whether it's the attorney general, the treasurer, statewide elected officers. Okay, supposed to get those together, and when they recommended what they wanted to do, Cooper didn't like it, so he never called them together again. And because the way that the state legislature adjourned themselves until a certain date in the future, so Cooper could do anything that he wanted in that period of time without any legislative involvement at all, because they had no constitutional way to get back in session.
Now, some of that has been corrected. There's
yes.
more that needs to be corrected. I want to take a minute and read the 10th Amendment. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. In other words, our federal government is not supposed to do anything that they're not specifically asked to do. And they have wandered far afield from their original intent.
So the bottom line is we need a transfer of power from Washington, D.C. back to the people.
Yes.
And that is where we're at.
That is exactly where we're at.
And that would be to remove a whole bunch of strings that come with federal money.
Absolutely.
Folks, we're about to take a break and appreciate your staying with us.
Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out RightWingGranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to RightWingGranny.com.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back. Glenn, you wanted to?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing that talking about where we're at with the federal government and their overreach, you know, it makes our state government that much important. And because there are remedies out there for an overreach of the federal government, one of the key ones is nullification.
Yes.
But you don't get there without a strong conservative state government. So my focus as a citizen is I've given up on the federal government to a large extent. I'm going to give them my votes, vote where I can. But where I really believe we have to focus is local and state government to be in a position where they will protect us as they're supposed to.
You know, yeah. I just recently sent a message in to Senator Murphy, and 5 days
Representative Murphy.
Representative Murphy. Thank you for correction. And it took him 5 days to respond to me, but he did an email. And it was about the debt ceiling. And that's the first time I've ever seen a representative, you know, respond back to me at all.
We had an experience with him where someone who was involved in the World Trade Center was working to get some of their benefits. And called Representative Murphy's office and had an answer within a day. It was amazing because the person was having a lot of trouble. They worked downtown for 3 months after 9/11, and because of that have all kinds of respiratory issues, and they were having trouble getting everything moving the way it was supposed to be, and he was a wonderful help. The next thing I want to talk
about. What's the one thing, Mary, before we leave the Congressman Murphy? The audience might want to know that we have, we being the precinct down at 20th Republican precinct down in Fairfield Harbor, has invited Congressman Murphy to come to our next meeting, which is June 17th. It's just a Saturday. 10:30 a.m. And if you're interested in more information, I'm going to give you my name and telephone number. You can give me a call. If you are interested in meeting him, I would like to come to that meeting. Again, my name is Alan, and my telephone number is 252-514-0525.
There's usually a very good turnout for.
I have been to some of your meetings, Alan, and I have enjoyed them greatly. I will say, just as a reminder, that the CCTA is a nonpartisan organization, but we support issues.
Constitutional issues.
Issues. And we are always open to hearing any candidate speak. Any candidate that wants to come and talk to us. We have a website, cctaxpayers.com, with a comment center, comment area. If you would like, if you're a Democrat candidate and you would like to address the group, you are more than welcome. But I would like to talk about the 16th Amendment. Up until 1913, America did not have an income tax. There had been one levied for a short time after the Civil War to pay for the war, but we never had an income tax. And if you read some of the quotes from our founding fathers, they believed it was immoral for an administration to leave office and leave debt. Boy, we could use that principle now. And this is how things work, not to our favor. In 1913, when the income tax was passed, due to generous exemptions and deductions, less than 1% of the population paid income taxes at the rate of only 1% of net income.
Wow.
That's amazing. I mean, so they started it in 1913. So we're 110 years later. And there are still people that don't pay income tax. I forget what the percentage is. At this point, 90% of our income tax revenue comes from the top earners. And a large percentage, I'm sorry, 90% of our earners pay something like 50% of our taxes. And the middle class pays a tremendous amount of them. And when the government talks about raising taxes, and they say things like, oh, we're not going to tax anyone with an income under $400,000, well, the minimum tax requirement when it was set up years ago with we won't tax anybody under $100,000 or something like that. Well, $100,000 now is very different than $100,000 was 20 years ago. And that's what happens. This is what you call a slippery slope. And we have gone from 1% of the population paying taxes of 1% of their net income to what we have now, which is totally different.
Well, see, I'm going to somewhat disagree with that because I think we need everybody to have skin in the game. Everybody needs to pay some taxes.
Yes.
Because right now, I think a majority of the population doesn't pay taxes, but instead gets benefits from the government. So therefore, there's no penalty for them with a tax increase.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Bob, because the only way that people can realize the impact of raising taxes is if it affects them directly. The other thing that, again, is going on, which is a socialist idea, is, as you were indicating, is we give benefits to the poorest people, many of which could actually support themselves if they were motivated to do so. That's why we have so many jobs that are vacant that years ago would have been filled. And I was pleased to see that recently that the Republican-led legislature, that they came up with a revision to the school opportunities, the scholarship program, opportunity scholarship program that opened it up to everyone regardless of income, where it used to be that you had to make less than a certain income, the federal level, I believe it was, which was set, I think.
To qualify for subsidy.
Again, we take from the hardworking people and we give it to the people that are not working. Now, if someone's disabled, they're unable to work physically or whatever, that's different. But there's a lot of people getting a lot of welfare benefits that are perfectly capable of working, but there's no motivation to work when you're getting stuff for free. And that's just human nature.
I just looked up a couple of statistics for you. The top 1% of income earners in America pay 22.2% of the income taxes. The top 50% pay 97.7%. That's amazing.
So essentially, if you're in the lower 50%, you're not, like Bob said, you're not paying any taxes.
You're paying 2.3%.
So you're receiving, you're not paying out anything.
Mm-hmm. One thing that that really gets me about how people speak about taxes, the corporate tax structure. And folks act like that's, The corporate tax structure is just another way of taxing every single individual consumer of services and products.
Because corporations don't pay taxes.
Not, that's a cost of goods sold. They manage it as that in their system. And so when our government taxes corporations instead of employees or owners of corporations, it really comes back to us. And that's, you know, most people don't even think about that, but it is so maddening.
Well, another aspect of that is I have heard it said when there has been some kind of a natural disaster and there has been looting of Walmart or something of the TVs, and somebody will say, well, they're a corporation, they have insurance. Well, does it occur to them that everybody's insurance rates go up because a store just got looted, or that maybe the prices in that store go up because a store got looted, or maybe the employees don't get their bonuses because the store got looted? I mean, sometimes we forget about the chain impact of silly things that are not what they appear to be.
I think that goes along with moral compass.
Yes.
And the moral compass that Glenn referred to in another show was that we lose sight of our moral compass if, you know, we choose addiction or
yes,
that sort of thing. And so our Christian values need to be strengthened.
Yes.
And we need to pay attention.
We need reminders that we need to be considered, not just be considered a Christian country. We need to adopt Christian principles and Judeo-Christian principles. And again, that's a whole separate discussion. But we need to get back to some founding principles, folks. We're gonna take an ad and take a time for an ad and listen to what the sponsors have to tell us right now. And again, thank you for staying with us.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swanspur, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Welcome back. Mary, you want to...
Yes. We're doing a little Woodrow Wilson bashing here, but I want to comment on something good that happened during Woodrow Wilson's term in office, and that was that women were finally allowed to vote. Now, when the country was founded...
Yeah, wait. I'm going to interrupt for just a second, because without women voting...
We wouldn't have had Bill Clinton.
We wouldn't have had Jack Kennedy. Okay, go ahead.
With Joe Biden.
But anyway.
Rub it in, Bob.
When America was founded and women were not allowed to vote, the theory was that the man, as the head of his household, represented his household and voted. Because there weren't a lot of single-parent households at that point. Most, you had an intact family culture, and you had the men who voted to represent his family. Now, I don't know if this happens in other families, but there have been many elections when we have canceled each other's votes out. Now, I don't know if that happens to other people.
Yes, there has been moments that that's...
Yes, but, you know, I think that mostly, with a few exceptions on who got elected, I think mostly giving women the vote was a good idea. That's just my opinion. And I will also mention that Prohibition was part of Woodrow Wilson. He vetoed it, but his veto got overridden. I don't know whether that was a good thing or a bad thing, because Prohibition definitely didn't work out well. But that was another part of his term in office. Now, Alan, you had something.
Yeah, as we were talking a little earlier about the role of the federal government and how things have changed since the Founding Fathers developed the Constitution, country was founded to overcome the tyranny of the monarchy, the British monarchy. And unfortunately, what we seem to be experiencing most recently is a couple of tyrannies going on that are very disturbing. For example, the president level, there's increasing use of executive orders. Executive orders are frequently ways that the president attempts to go around what his legal authority is. The executive branch president is not allowed to make law. His job is to enforce law. But like, for example, Joe Biden keeps talking about forgiving student debt. He has no authority to do that. Even Nancy Pelosi said he didn't. But he is prepared. I don't think he'll succeed, but he's talked about it, promised it. Maybe he's using it as a way of soliciting votes about issuing an executive order. And that amounts to billions of dollars that he would shift from one group of people to somebody else would have to pay for it. So that's an example. That would be tyranny as bad as anything that was happening when we fought against Britain. Okay? The other thing that's going on that I think is tyrannical also, you see it at the state level with the governor. The governor was given executive power during the COVID crisis, because there was a bill that allowed the governor to deal with emergencies. And those emergencies were originally intended to be things like natural emergencies that have a discrete beginning and usually a discrete end. At some point, you clean up everything. But this just went on and on and on. And he refused to comply and give up his authority. And now he's mandating these wind farms offshore. And that's that's not in his authority to do that. Now, whether he'll be challenged successfully or not, I don't know. But I think another thing is the tyranny of the bureaucracies. As Bob was mentioning during the break, the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, they come up with these rules and regulations. Recently, they proposed emission standards for gasoline fired automobiles and trucks that are impossible to meet. So they're not outlawing gasoline vehicles. They're just making the restrictions so impossible to meet that, in effect, they gasoline engines will no longer be able to be produced. So that's how the bureaucracies and are taking over the control of our country by doing things that are effectively legislative actions, but they're doing it on their own, unchecked, unchallenged, and by unelected bureaucrats.
And they're not taking our best interests at heart. I mean, I remember when, and this gets very strange, President Obama passed an executive order that established DACA, which was right. the deferred action on children who were brought here when they were underage. Now, theoretically, an executive order can be overturned by the following president, but the court got involved and they didn't let Trump overturn that, which was interesting. But you brought up the emissions thing, and there was an article today in the Washington Free Beacon about the Ann Arbor Public School Board of Education, who had decided to follow the Biden administration mandates and go to electric school buses. Well, it hasn't worked well. They were told that the infrastructure upgrades would cost them about $50,000. They wound up costing $200,000. There's also a problem about electric vehicles in cold weather. We're talking about Ann Arbor, Michigan. You might get away with this in Southern California, but I can guarantee you that electric school buses in Ann Arbor, Michigan are not a good idea. And they're trying to comply with Biden's EPA regulations and grants that they're giving to these schools to buy these buses. And it's a disaster. It's not working well. And of course, there is the risk if these school buses are exposed, let's say they run through a really deep puddle, you run the risk of fire. You know, they are not the safest thing that you want your child in. So that's another example of tyranny.
Well, I would suggest more that if you run a school bus and you run it for a few hours a day in the morning and you run it for a few hours in the evening or whatever else, it's probably the charge is going to last for that as a school bus, because it's more of an urban thing than a distance
except
thing.
In but it's cold still
it's
weather.
Not. But still, it's pretty darn stupid, because if you look at them, I believe most of the electric cars now, the EVs, rather than heating the whole compartment, they're heating the seats. So let's heat the 60 seats in a school bus.
True.
And what about the fact that these batteries lose their charge in cold weather?
Well, they do. I have an electric car, and it does lose its charge in the wintertime. I have to put a blanket over it and treat it like a child, just to, you know, in a really cold snap. And generally, I'll make it through, but it is true in cold weather.
And you live in North Carolina. You can get away with it.
That's right.
But can you picture Michigan?
I can't. Not with how many kids are on a school bus.
But again, let's go back to that old thing that when your only tool is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So they're looking at electric as being able to solve all transportation problems, and that is not true.
And where do we get our electricity?
There are certain vehicles that are working great and wonderful in certain urban environments, but guys, don't try to turn it into the be all for everything.
What takes this the wrong direction is all of the money that is put into particular industries that aren't necessarily the best choice. If you want green energy, build nuclear power plants, and they can make these mini or modular type reactors.
Yes.
And that is green. And if somebody says, well, what about the disposal problems? Well, what about the disposal problems of the solar panels?
And the windmill blades.
So, I mean, we're people, this is being driven by something bigger than green. It's being driven by big business that is focused on these few ways to make power, electrical power,
and
that is not the best choice.
What about the little kids in Africa that are in the lithium mines? I mean, how do you justify that on a moral level?
And the tyranny, getting back to the tyranny issue, the tyranny comes from not having these options available. The tyranny comes from two things. Number one is the federal government using somebody else's tax money as incentives.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first problem. Second problem is that it's mandated. They want to mandate it, and that's where the problem is. If you want to buy an electric vehicle and it works for you, I'm all for it. But I'm not in favor of the government mandating or coming up with emission standards that eliminate the options for you. And that kind of tyranny, people just put up with it.
Well, the government structure, unfortunately, with the federal government, they bribe us with their own money. We all pay taxes. So somebody else isn't subsidizing us. So we end up paying federal taxes. They give us a little bit back, knowing that if we don't take it, that they're going to give it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole system is set up to entrap us to do things because we don't want to miss the opportunity at least getting some of our money back.
Yeah.
Yes, getting some of our money back is quite the incentive.
Very little, but some.
That's right.
Yeah, we're in the position where we're banging your head against the wall. It feels so good when you stop.
It's feeling good.
Folks, I think we're about to take another break. And again, thank you for staying with us.
Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
Hey folks, here's a tip. When you think firearms and ammo, think East 70 Palm. They've been on Highway 70 east of New Bern across from the fairgrounds for 31 years. Drew Preston and his staff know firearms. Gun sales have tripled in under a year, and women shooters are the fastest growing part of their business. Their great inventory, over 300 guns in stock, changes daily. And if you want something they don't have, they'll look for it. New and used, rifles, shotguns, and pistols. Buy, sell, or trade. And they also have many holsters, scopes, and other gun accessories. Every member of the staff is deeply knowledgeable, and every one of them is an excellent shooter. So don't just come for the inventory. Come for the thoughtful advice. E70 Palm, your home for firearms, ammo, and answers. Highway 70 East, New Bern, across from the fairgrounds.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Thank you for listening to our sponsors. Alan, go ahead.
Yes, I'd just like to follow up our discussion with just one more point, and that is you don't realize that you're losing liberty if you don't have a good appreciation for what liberty and freedom have meant in this country. The school curriculum now does not teach what this country was founded on. So they, a lot of the students now, they hear these things, they're told about the world's going to end in 12 years and that you need this and the government's going to do this for you. They paint the government as the solution to all your problems. And these kids come out of school, not all of them, but most of them come out with this belief. And they don't even realize how much their freedoms have been eroded and their liberties. And if the people from 100, 150 years ago could see what we're putting up with now, they would be totally shocked at how we've allowed the government to manage our lives. And that's pure Marxism. That's what the Marxists want. They want to control the kids. They want to take the children out of the family. It's no longer the parents raising the family. The schools are going to raise your kids. They're going to teach them about sex. They're going to teach them about different behaviors. And that is part of the problem.
Well, the breakdown of the family unit is all the policies that are put in place for the purpose. It can't be anything but on purpose to break down the family unit. How the social welfare system is set up, it drives our society to single parent circumstances in many cases, and that's just.
And if you look historically, every autocracy, if you go back to Hitler, if you go back to Stalin, you go back to Mao Zedong. All of it, like you're saying, Glenn, undermines the family, because the family and the integrity of the family is so critical to freedom and a republic. If you're going to have a republic, you've got to have intact families. What do we have now? We have higher and higher percentage of children being born out of wedlock, being raised by one-parent families. That was something that was very, very rare years ago.
Well, you know, along with that, I'm going to go back to Daniel Patrick Moynihan up in New York when they first started pushing this, because they decided that as long as the father didn't live in the household, then you could get subsidies, you could get your aid or whatever, which was one something that encouraged a non-intact family.
Yes.
Prior to that, you look at like Harlem or whatever else was a very, very intact area.
If we were to daydream just for a second, what would our America look like if we had it our way? I mean, if we're going to transfer the power back to the people, how does that even begin?
Well, I mean, first of all, you end up having to have, I believe, a strongly Judeo-Christian situation where even if you've got two folks living together now, raising a child, half the time they're not married. So that's a low commitment situation. So you got to get back to the moral principles.
Yes.
Christy, to go on what you were just asking. Now, remember, not only would we want to transfer the authority back to the people, we would want to transfer the responsibility back. Remember, right now, you're never allowed to fail in school.
Well,
if you just attend school, from folks that we know, just attending and you don't turn in a paper, you still get a 50 or something like that.
And Bob, I'm going to just reach back to what Glenn said earlier about, you know, the federal government. I've just forgotten about them because, you know, I'm really focused on the state and the county, really. That's where I have control.
That is where. Mm-hmm.
And that's why I went into the Board of Education, and I became very passionate for the last 3 years about what in the world's going on there. And peeling back the onion, it's been a journey.
And by the way, from the federal perspective, you're a terrorist. So,
well, because I would say with this this new board, I think that there's less terrorism.
Yes,
in the school system.
Agreed.
And I think that we are moving in the right direction, as I heard them put strategy and plan into place this past month, and I'm really happy to see that. If I were to have, you know, daydream for a minute, what would my country look like? It would look a lot more the way I used to see it, and that's growing up in the 70s. I mean, even it was not great then, but it was a better
One of the things, I want to go back to the single parent family, and I want to go back to the dual parent working family, because one of the things that happened, starting very slowly in the early 70s and blossoming in the past 50 years, was the growth of the daycare industry. As the government began to take more and more of our money, I think they're taking 45% of our income now. I don't even know what the number is, but it's up there. And women went back into the workforce in order to help support the family. The cottage industry, what had previously been, well, my neighbor watches my kid after school, became a multi-million dollar business. There is a financial interest of some people in single parent families and in dual income families. They are supporting an industry that we didn't have.
And so now the public schools are in fact moving in that direction. For example, it used to be kindergarten was the earliest you started. Mm-hmm. Now they have pre-K. And now they're talking about expanding to daycare operations within the public schools. And again, we're turning our children over to the government earlier and earlier. And we don't, you know. And part of, you know, I think what undermined the family was premarital sex. Now, I'm not saying that when I was growing up, premarital sex didn't happen. But I would say of the people I knew, most of the men got married when they're 22, 23, 24. That was the typical average age. Why? You got married primarily because you wanted to start a family and you wanted to have romance and you wanted to have sex. That's the only way you could get it. And what did it do? What did it do for men? It made men responsible. Men stood up and had to assume those responsibilities. Mm-hmm. The more responsibility you demand of something, the more likely they are to become responsible. If you don't demand anything, then they don't have to produce anything. That's why you have men getting married first time, they're 35, 38, 40, whatever. They're living with their parents and so on.
Or they're living with a series of girlfriends.
And why shouldn't they? If they get all the candy, why should they, they're getting everything for free.
Why the milk is for free.
And I think that really undermined the family structure.
It did.
Because it's the Judeo-Christian principles going back.
Because it didn't force them to grow up.
It was not permissible to be living with somebody. I never heard of people living together, weren't married. That was unheard of.
What's worse about them getting them earlier is, again, it changes the focus of the purpose of the school. They're preparing them somewhat to go to school. That's one concept, which is not all bad. But if they're putting their resources towards these pre-school age, they're distracted from the main focus again, the primary focus of the school, in addition to them getting a hold of them to indoctrinate them more.
And whatever happened to the little kid being home with mommy baking cookies?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, there's just a lot of stress in our world right now, and I've heard it from so many different people in so many different facets of our world. I ask, how are you doing? It's not good. It's not good. I'm hearing it's not good. And it's about food prices. It's about gasoline going up and down. No one can count on anything right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so A lot of things have boiled up to, we're at a boiling point, I think. I don't know just how much further we can go. It's kind of like the debt ceiling.
Where is
the tipping point? And where is the tip of the iceberg?
There was an article about a week or so ago about a hotel in upstate New York that was kicking out veterans to
make
room.
That turned out to be false.
But New York City, they were kicking them out.
Well, Laura Ingram, maybe not yours, but there was a story, and I just saw it. I don't see media that much, where that was a hoax. Well, there was at least one of them.
Because there was a nonprofit organization involved.
Yeah, that's about
it. It was a hoax.
Okay.
And they didn't kick the veterans out. It was in New York, just so that we don't check ourselves.
There was, I believe, Rockland County one where the veterans were asked to leave because they were paying $95 a night to stay, or they were.
And the government was paying more for the illegals,
and that.
Well, as long as we're checking on that, because there are some stories where veterans were said to have been removed that was not factual.
Yeah, okay.
That's my only reason to come.
But we do wonder. I mean, we see the rights being given to non-citizens when they're getting free medical, they're getting all this stuff, and we're being required to, well, I don't think it's there anymore, but remember the mandate that you had to have health care? Part of Obamacare, we had to pay to have health care, and the illegals were coming in and getting it for free? Are we nuts?
Yes, we are nuts. Christy, we're nuts for putting up with it.
Christy, a quick one. Again, going with the despair, and again, we had Gen Zers on the show. But the despair, how much of the despair is caused by that 24-hour news cycle that every half hour they hear something horrible?
I don't watch the news, okay? I get my news
somewhere
else. I really don't watch the news. Anyway, I won't talk about where I do get my information, only because we all get it from somewhere different. The despair is individualized. It is somebody's in the hospital, they have a broken, they've had knee surgery and then they fell and now they have an ankle, broken ankle and they hurt their back. And I mean, it just goes on and on. That's just one person. But then you have other people who are facing foreclosure. I don't know. You know, I just hear some despair. People are just really...
You know, and this gets back, Christy, to what Glenn was saying about religious communities. People now believe that if you're having difficulties, whatever, the government is going to solve your problems. Okay? Years ago, people said, well, what did people do before we had all these welfare programs? How did people exist? Were they starving? They were supported by the local community,
the church.
Local churches. And it bound those people together.
Right.
Those people respected and formed better relationships.
Absolutely.
Now they look to the government instead of it form. And so then when they have problems, they're more likely to be despair about it.
Because
they don't
have
a support
community.
Group. They don't have a support group that they
have. I think that this is just a place where we're at, and I think that the balance of power coming back to the people is possible, and it's doable.
And all I can say is we need Jesus.
Folks, more to come, but not for this show. And again, thank you for staying with us. We appreciate your being there. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call. Thank you again.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in Newbern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in Newbern.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.